Welcome to Tom Rhodes Radio. Thank you for listening. Hey, this week is a very exciting week in Scottish history because they're voting on the referendum to be an independent country or not. So I'm very privileged and thankful that I got to spend a month recently in Edinburgh doing the Fringe Festival. So this episode is very much dedicated to Scotland because this is such an important moment in Scottish history. So I want to talk about my history with the Edinburgh Festival and why this year was so important to me and why this year me doing that festival is such a story of redemption, which is what this episode involves and the someone involved in this story. If you've never heard the story, I've always wanted to do the Edinburgh Fringe Festival since I first got in with London, and I went up to check out the festival in 1999 and in 2000. And at the Gilded Balloon, there's a late night show called Late and Live, and it's notorious for heckling, and it can be very vicious. And there was a show in August 2000 hosted by Louis Schaefer, and it was an all-American lineup, and a lot of people had gone there specifically to heckle Louis Schaefer, and it was vicious, and it was mean. And I admit, I found it amusing. But it turned into the most anti-American hate rally ever. One American comedian after another. It was lambs to the slaughter. And my old friend, Rich Hall, was supposed to close the show. And he mysteriously got laryngitis in the course of the show. So he asked me if I would be willing to take his spot. And me being the cocky son of a bitch that I am, I thought, these people are gonna love me. So I'm pounding beers backstage to get extra liquid courage. And when I went on, the sound man fucked me. I'm no flag waver, and I'm proudly the communist of my family. When I walked out there, the sound man played God Bless America. And this already rabid anti-American audience went apeshit. These people, they're screaming, fuck you, go back to America. And I couldn't even get started on the microphone. Just fuck you, go back to America. And it was so deafening and the yelling. And I had this really serene moment where I sat down cross-legged on the stage and I lit a cigarette. And I just soaked in this view. And I'll never forget this cinematic view of all these ugly contorted faces and the spittle coming out of their mouth. Fuck you, go back to America. So for the last 15 years, that's been my Vietnam. I've woken up in a cold sweat in the middle of the night, still thinking I'm on that stage at Late in Life. So I got to do, and that building that the Gilded Balloon used to be in burned down in 2002. I never realized how hard I had taken that story. In December 2002, I'm playing in Atlanta, Georgia. The club, the Punchline, puts you at the Hilton Suites. You have a bedroom, separate living room. I woke up late. I'm in my underwear. I had just made coffee. And I turn on CNN, and Old Town Edinburgh is engulfed in flames. And they showed a map of the center of Edinburgh, the Old Town area, and what was engulfed in flames. And I knew at that moment that the Gilded Balloon was burning to the ground. And me and my underwear, I stood up alone in my hotel room in Atlanta, and I just went. Every comedian remembers the worst show they ever did, but very few of those comedians ever get to watch that place burn to the ground on live television. So Karen Corin, today's guest, she operates and runs the Gilded Balloon. So she didn't even remember that story. And it was so important in my life. And that's the thing in your life is, and especially as a comedian, you know, things will happen to you to traumatize you, or you'd make some like blunderous mistake. There are moments when you can redeem yourself. My favorite Bob Dylan speech, he won some award. He said his father told him it's possible in this life to get so defiled that your own mother and father will give up on you. But you must always remember, in the good Lord's ability to believe in your own ability to redeem yourself, in the good Lord's faith in you to have the ability to redeem yourself. Nonetheless, it feels good to right some wrongs that happen in your life. So I got to obliterate that Leighton Live story. I did Leighton Live 4 times this month, and I was the sheriff, and I came out with a lot of ammunition. Anytime I did get heckled, I crushed them. The last time was a little lippy because I told that story, and I had all these heckler comeback lines I wanted to destroy the people with. And I invited the people to yell, "Fuck you, go back to America." But then that got out of hand, that joke. But nonetheless, I dealt with it like a man. And my month at the Gilded Balloon is in such a beautiful old building. And Karen Corin, this is the best venue to be a part of at the Edinburgh Festival. She's such a loving mother. She's the queen mother of the Fringe Festival. She's been involved in over 30 Fringe Festivals. And we talk about all the people she launched, but she's so loving and such a cool person. And to have her looking out for me the entire festival and be working with her at this place, and it was just absolutely Coolsville with the performers and actors and all these great people that were hanging out in the Loft Bar, which is the private bar for the performers and people working at the Gilded Balloon. So Karen and I recorded this episode at the Loft Bar of the Gilded Balloon the last week of the festival. She's someone, I have so much love for this woman, and I miss her already, and I am hell-bent on coming up with a new hour so I can get back to do the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. And I love this woman like a family member, and I know you will too. So it is my pleasure to present to you now the one and only Karen Corin. It is my pleasure to introduce to the podcast listening universe, Karen Corin.
Hi.
Yay.
I'm Karen.
How many Fringe, what have you done? 30 years?
Yes. I've actually done a bit more than 30 years because I started a little comedy club before I started the Gilded Balloon.
In Edinburgh?
Yes. It's called McNally's. And it was just a little bar with a restaurant, you know, that could take about 100 people. So I started with people like Alan Cumming and Mike Myers, actually, he performed
Alan
there.
Cumming played for you?
Yeah.
Really? Alan Cumming. Of cabaret fame?
Of cabaret fame, he did indeed.
So he started out as a stand-up comedian?
He started out as a cabaret performer, funnily enough. He used to do a pastiche on cabaret, Belcommen, and it was Victor and Barry, they were called. And they used to sing, Belcommen, mesdames. Vic and Barry, Vic and Barry, that was their joke. They were fantastic. They were from Kelvin side, which is the posh side of Glasgow, is what, and you know, they dressed up as after dinner performers.
It sounds like it was the Berlin of the 20s cabaret.
That's right, it was. Yeah. I mean, Paul Merton, he as well performed for me as Paul Martin, as he was then, and lots and lots of people. Jerry Sadovitz, Billy Connolly came in. He didn't perform, unfortunately, but that was in the early 80s.
Jerry Sadovitz did probably one of the meanest jokes I've ever heard anyone do about Americans. I saw him at the Melbourne Comedy Festival in Australia, and he said, what do you get when you cross a monkey with an American? Nothing. A monkey's too smart to fuck an American.
That's the kind of jokes he does. That's absolutely right. He is
a hate-filled magician.
Do you know what? He is the shyest, quietest person off stage, but never gets on. Whenever he gets up there, he's got to say something awful. Did you not hear about when he went to Montreal?
No, what happened?
He went on stage and said, "Hi, moose fuckers." The minute, and some guy got up and jumped on him and started beating him up.
In Montreal?
In Montreal.
Wow. They don't take that.
And he said, the other thing he said was, what's the difference? The problem with you is half of you speak French and the other half of you let them. So wow. He was so anti, it was terrible. But actually, he's a lovely guy. but as you probably knew.
Yeah, wonderful, sweet guy. You've broken all the, how many acts have you, that
Well, I count them every day. Like sheep, no, a lot.
Well, you brought over, you were the first one to bring Eddie Izzard to the Gilded Balloon.
Yeah.
Russell Brand, you told me.
That's right.
So, I mean, you personally brought these people here.
Yes, well, I asked them to perform here. I didn't actually pay. I have paid performers to come here. Like Mark Maron was over about over 10 years ago now. I do pay for them to come, but inviting them to come in those days when Eddie Izzard and various others, it wasn't expensive to come here, you know, and you all you were doing was doing, you know, it was a platform for comedy, and I had a late night club, and I was the only one that had a late club. So everyone came. Stephen Wright was down and thought it was amazing. I heard, somebody told me. I never actually saw them. But loads and loads of people. It was just a place where comedians could come. They would all chew the fat and drink a lot. And then they'd go and see who was on stage. And then they would either die or live to fight another day.
What's the history of the Gilded Balloon?
Well, the Gilded Balloon, when I was in McNally's, this guy came and asked me if I wanted to put on shows at the festival, and he had a bar cafe called the Gilded Balloon. And what actually happened was I started doing the Gilded Balloon, and the bar and cafe died, and the Gilded Balloon kept going. So that was in the early 80s. And actually, there was friends of mine who were doing comedy, and they just said to me, we really, really need a place to perform in Edinburgh. Please help us. And, you know, I just went, okay. So that's how it came about. And we started Leighton Live, and there was a great camaraderie in the 80s of all these comedians, you know, and it was just different. I mean, I was part of the whole crowd of us that would stay up all night and, you know, just have a great time. You know, it wasn't a serious business. It was, I mean, there were people trying to make it, but it wasn't about money. It was about being together and having a good time.
And you're the queen mother of the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. I mean, you are the Edinburgh Fringe Festival.
That's just because I'm old.
Well, but no,
I've been doing that long time.
Like, I'm really glad that I played at the Gilded Balloon for my debut. And I talked to some acts that were here years before, and now they're doing different venues. And they've all commiserated and said, yeah, I wish I was at the Gilded Balloon this year, because Karen really... you know, it's really like a family atmosphere. And, you know, you got Richard running the place from, I met at the New Zealand Comedy Festival. You got people from Australian festivals. So, I mean, even the people that are running your venue are like the best in the comedy festival business.
Yeah, so, they are. They're great. I mean, because I've been doing it so long, I've managed to build up a very strong base of people who love it. They love the comedy business. They love what they do. I mean, Fred Southern Star, who runs Leighton Live for me, every night she texts me and tells me how the show has gone and says, I love my job, I love working for you. And, you know, she's just amazing. And, I mean, without these people, of course, I couldn't do it. And, yeah, I do. I am a bit like a mother figure. I can't help it. I've always been like that.
I love it. I mean, it's under your loving umbrella, you know? I mean, every night you ask me how I'm doing, how the shows are going. And
well, I'm interested. And you've got a great show, by the way, Tom.
Thanks, Karen.
You have. You've got a great show.
Thanks. And I, you know, it was important. We should talk about this, get it out of the way. It was important for me to do the Gilded Balloon because I had this disastrous Leighton Live experience here 15 years ago.
Yeah, you open your bloody show with it, don't you?
Now I've pushed it towards the end, though. But,
oh, have you?
Yeah, yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, you
yeah,
didn't just
yeah.
do that because I went in.
No, well, no, I you... was doing it for like a week or two at the beginning, and yeah. then now it's better to do it towards the end.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. I might have to come and see it again then.
You should. Yeah, of course. Now we're in the last week of the festival. Now my flow and order is perfect.
All right. You know. I don't know. I think your flow was pretty good, actually.
Thanks, Karen. But I'm loving my experience. I love the room I'm in.
I'll tell you what I liked about you was you were doing gags and everything, but then you went into lovely stories.
Yeah.
And lots of your stories are a man, you know, telling his story. And you know, with his heart in his sleeve, which is, I think, important.
Yeah, the best stories are failure, humiliation, love stories.
That's right.
Like big risks that I took for love.
I like the feeling of you falling in Amsterdam, falling down and hurting your head. And,
on the bike, yeah. Yeah.
Sorry, but...
It's a true story. I was madly in love with this girl, and she had broken up with me.
I know.
And I was
so into your material, Tom.
Yeah.
It's all right. You can all come and see the show. It's great.
But so I had this Late in Live experience. Now, Late in Live, the Gilded Balloon used to be at this Calgate location.
Yeah.
And that Late in Live was, everyone called it the Bear Pit. Because, I mean, then there was a
worse bear pit, which happened to be in this building, because this building here at Cheviot was the Fringe Club back in the 80s, and all people from the festival would come and, you know, try and sell their shows. Instead of going to the high street, they would come here and do a bit of their act, and they would get booed off, and, you know. But my Late in Live was absolutely for stand-up comedians or comics. You know, I mean, stand-up comedy really came to the fore in the 80s in the UK. And, I mean, you lot have been doing it a lot longer in America.
But wouldn't you say that Billy Connolly kind of advanced the modern style of British stand-up comedy?
Yeah, but Billy Connolly was a folk singer. So Billy Connolly was in the folk singing music scene. So every time he performed, he would do a banjo stuff, or, you know, his music would always be part of it. So just clear, pure stand-up really just came, and it was a lot to do with political satire and, you know, the Margaret Thatcher years and everything. That's when it became big. And then, of course, it flowed into different stuff. So Late in Live was somewhere for all the acts to come and moan about their shows, and drink and watch other comics. And that's when there became a big admiration for other comedians. It wasn't this Apollo, you know, TV thing and doing stadiums. You know, it was small clubs, very dirty, smoky atmosphere, you know. I mean,
yeah.
You could still smoke then and in venues. And so
it was cinematic, you know.
Yeah,
people smoking cigarettes and drinking.
Yeah.
And that's how comedy was when I started in
the
80s.
Well, that's how it was. I mean, I remember Joe Brand and I would sit with Joe Brand and we would just smoke and chew the fat and chat and, you know. And I stopped smoking 20 years ago now. But I used to smoke all the time, and your hair would smell of it. And
when did the Late in Live show turn into? Because the old one was like really notorious for the heckling, and I know I talked to a lot of English acts in London that wouldn't do it because they were afraid of it.
There's still comedians that are afraid of it.
And you see it now where I was backstage, and you see, you know, comedians from different parts of the world, and they come here and they've already defeated themselves before they walk out on stage at Late in Live because they've heard so much about it.
I know, I think it's a little bit ridiculous actually.
And this room is nowhere near as intimidating as the old one. The old one, the audience was right on top of you, tiny stage. I mean, this building, the Gilded Balloon, is in now. I mean, it looks like Hogwarts to me.
Yes,
it's like an enchanting Scottish. I mean, it's part of University of Edinburgh.
That's right.
And so the Late in Live show is now in what is the University of Edinburgh's debating hall.
That's right.
So
how
rough is it going to get in a debating hall?
Well, what we ended up doing was we ended up cladding it in blacks because it's all underneath, it's all wooden paneling and, you know, a complete and utter debating hall. So we've had to disguise it as much as we can. And also, you know, we've got heavy, strong, not strobe lighting, but different kind of evening lighting, you know. The thing is, we started in the 80s with Late in Live, and we used to do it from midnight till 4 in the morning. Now we do it from 1 a.m. till 5 in the morning, so it's got later and later. And the premise of it is, for a compere who rules the night, he completely runs it, and it can live or die with this compere, the way he runs it. And then four comics, and then a band. And the band have to be late, loud, and very much a party band so that everyone dances. That's the premise of it. In fact, Bill Bailey, who you may or may not know, is
he's been on this show.
Has he?
Yeah.
He's a very good friend of mine. He's lovely. And he started at the Gilded Balloon, and he had a band called... Oh, what were they called? That's terrible.
He started in a band here?
No, he started in a double act called the Rubber Bishops. And his partner, Martin, he went back to becoming a teacher. But, you know, he is the best musician in the world. He's got letters after his name as a musician. So he loves the bands and he loves punk music. And him and Kevin Eldon and other comedians, they all formed a band called Beer Gut 100. See, I got it in the end.
Oh, instead of Haircut 100.
Yeah. I was going to say Haircut 100. No, Beer Gut 100, because they all had little tummies and, you know. And I've got some great footage that he found, actually, of all of them. Alan Davis was going around filming them, you know, doing head butting and, you know, all that kind of completely mad at Late and Live in the mid-90s. And they loved it. So we had quite a few comedians that were in band, like Lenny Henry. He came along and sang one night. And what's that guy who does the doctor in... the doctor in America.
Harry Anderson. No.
You know the one that... he's a comedian, works with Stephen Fry. Stephen Fry, Hugh Laurie.
Hugh Laurie, oh yeah.
Hugh Laurie is a musician, and they would come down and play. I mean, it was amazing, some of the people that would come down there to play, you know, and just sing, and, you know, it was great. And that was after the comedy, you know, so it would be really late, you know.
So all these brilliant performers are there. When did Late and Live become the heckle fest that people are so afraid of?
No, that's when it came. It was a heckle
that's
fest
when it
then.
Was. Oh.
But these people.
So Hugh Laurie had to.
No,
he's
these
going
people.
Piano, and people are. No. Get off the stage, you prick.
Well, people like Scott Cocuro, I remember, has had a lot of problems in Late in Life, but he can take it, you know. The thing is that you only get the heckling when you were saying... Russell Brand, for example, when he did it, he was so out of his head that he was just fighting with the audience. And the audience, Scottish audience, it's like waging war, you know. You say something wrong to a Scottish audience, they're going to get you. And they'll do anything they can to get you. But if you are a strong, funny comic... it's great, you know. There's loads of Americans. I think it was unfortunate for you that you were there in the Bush years, you know.
Yeah.
Because before that, you know, there's been loads of Americans that have done brilliantly. Patrice O'Neill, for example.
I was here the year Patrice was here.
He was brilliant. I love that.
Because I stayed in a flat with Patrice O'Neill that
did
week.
You?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And I remember talking to him about that disaster afterwards. And he was like, he was so funny. He was like, fuck these people. He's like, look at their coins. Their coins are stupid. What do you care about their opinion?
But he could just get over anything. You know, it doesn't matter what they threw at him, I think, anyway.
Well, the thing about that show that I had the disaster on, I wasn't even supposed to be on the show. Rich Hall, my friend...
Or was he?
Yeah, we're still friends. But he, you know, he said he was having some laryngitis problems, you know. I've heard Rich do that a few times when he hasn't wanted to go on. But.
Yeah, but you know, Rich Hall, when he first came to Edinburgh, I've been doing this show called So You Think You're Funny, which is brand new comics. It's a competition. And what happened was he just said, can I go in for the competition? We didn't know who he was. And this was in 1990 or something, 89-90. And he came along and did it. And one of the judges was the commissioning editor for Channel 4. And he went, I've seen that guy. He writes for Letterman, or he'd been on Letterman.
He was on Saturday Night Live.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so we had to disqualify him. And he went, oh, I just wanted some gigs. You know, I just wanted to perform. And after that, of course, you know, he's done nothing else.
What are some of the greatest moments in the festival? I mean, like, what about Russell Brand? You remember when he was Mr. Drugged Out Party Lunatic, right?
And Russell's a great guy and really intelligent. And, you know, I mean, I think he was frustrated and he was in a bad place. I first met him in the late 90s and I asked him to come up to Edinburgh because I thought it would be good for him and, you know, he'd get to learn quite a lot. I think he did. But there was a few things that happened. One was that he did a show where he was comparing the show. And it was a compilation show, and he got a bee in his bonnet about something, and he was shouting at the audience. And, you know, I can't control my staff all the time. And the technical guy turned off his mic, and he got mad, and he threw the mic across the stage, and then he would start shouting and the security came and dragged him off stage and physically carried him out
wow.
while he was kicking and screaming, and he put his leg right through a glass door and cut his legs to hell. An ambulance had to come. He went to a hospital. He was in hospital for 4 or 5 days.
Jesus.
And he sent me such a lovely, lovely letter of apology, because that's what happened. You are in that state and then you feel very, very humble and apologetic. And he wrote me a 6-page letter of, I'm really sorry, brother. Getting it all out, confession time. And I didn't realise that, of course, that would have been valuable now, but I've lost it, because the Gilded Balloon burnt down in 2002 and it was in the building. So I lost so much memorabilia in that time, because we'd been in the Cowgate for 17 years and then it just burnt to the ground one night just before Christmas in the early
2006, right?
Yeah, 2002.
Was it 2002?
2002, oh. Yeah. And luckily I'd come up here by that time to Teviot, and I had had 1 year in here. Because I was going to do Cowgate and here, but fate had different ideas.
And
so we had to move Leighton Live up here. And that, I really didn't. The last Leighton Live was in 2001, down in the Cowgate. And we had, on the bill that last Leighton Live was Daniel Kitson, Ross Noble, and Adam Hills. They compared, the three of them. They took turns in comparing, and there were some great people on. And after that, I mean, we filmed it, and it was just, you know, I don't know if you've ever heard of Sean Cullen, Cork and the Juice Pigs.
Oh, yeah.
Well, he had written a song about Edinburgh, which everybody got on stage and sang, and it was just like, you know, a torch song thing. It was lovely. And then we moved up here, and luckily Daniel Kitson, Russell Howard, and people like that started comparing, and it was because of them it worked. You know, Adam Hills, these really, really strong compares, you know. The Ross Noble was a compare for many years for me. And Frank Skinner compared back in the early 90s. Had loads of great compares, and it's the strength of these compares that kept the nights together, you know?
Right.
So it didn't really matter if one comic died, because the next one would... I mean, it didn't matter if all of them died, because the compere kept it together, you know?
Right. That's what I love about the UK, is the fact that they have the best act, usually emceeing.
Yeah.
Where in the States, it's the opposite. We have the least experienced rookie.
So they're meant to be just joining it all together.
So a lot of people, like, even show up late because they expect the first act is going to suck. Oh, but we can get there a little late. We'll miss the MC guy.
Oh, really?
Where here, it's usually the best guy is the host on a compilation
show. And it's the compares that you have, are they the people that do warm-ups for chat shows as well?
Some of them.
Because, you know, some of our best comics do warm-ups for comedy shows here, and they're great, you know. There's some great comics over here.
What are some of the other biggest disasters?
A guy standing over there is one of our best compares. He did Leighton Live for years.
Stephen K. Amos.
Stephen K. Amos,
oh,
yeah.
Good friend. He's also been on this show.
Ah, yeah. Well, he's a very good compare. And he compared Leighton Live for many years. they end up getting too big, of course.
Right.
You know, they won't do it anymore.
What about that? I mean, doesn't that bother you in a certain way that, you know, you give people this platform and then when they become massive stars, they don't come back?
Of course it bothers me, but what can I do?
But I mean, Steven's here. He's doing shows and...
Yeah, I mean, there are the certain ones that remember and come back and, you know, and... Next year's our 30th anniversary, and I don't know what I'm going to do, whether I should try and invite some of them back. I don't know, we'll see. But when we burnt down, my staff actually did a big benefit down in London, because I didn't own the building, and, you know, I didn't get any insurance. I got insurance... as in, you know, the furniture, but that was it, you know. So they did a lovely benefit in a big theatre in the West End, and all of them did it, you know, Bill Bailey and Eddie Izzard and, you know, lots of them, Stephen. That was very touching, actually.
Very nice. So what have been the biggest disasters? What have been your most...
Well, I think a big fire is a big disaster.
Yeah, I was thinking more like comedian, like the Russell Brand kicking in the glass door and cutting his leg up and stuff.
Yeah, that was only one. He had another, which I've actually got on film. And there's a lady doing a documentary at the moment about Russell, which is going to. Sundance Festival, and she came over and interviewed me, and I wasn't sure whether I let them see the film or the footage. The footage is quite disturbing, and I think Russell was quite shocked when he was there, he knew what he was like. I mean, it's not shocking in, you know, it's not rude or anything, he's just angry, you know, and he's not funny, you know?
Right.
And because you can't really be funny when you're too angry, you know? I mean, the worst comics are the bitter ones. You know, nobody wants to listen to a bitter, angry comic.
Yeah,
you know?
That's the hardest thing in the world to watch.
I know, and there's a lot of them that have been working so hard, and they've been great at some point in their life. And, of course, I always think that there's a lot of middle management comics, you know, that are just going to pay their rent and do okay, but they're never going to set the heather alight, you know, they're never going to get up there, you know, and that is very frustrating for them. So they go on and then they go on stage and get bitter, and that's when people stop booking them.
Right.
And that's why they have to look at that and think, I'm an entertainer, entertain. I looked after one of the most brilliant comics that I've ever known called Phil Kay. I don't know if you've ever come across him.
I met him last night.
I hear he's doing good again, but I looked after him for over 20 years. And my God, was he in 1994, he got the best stand-up in UK award, and he got television, and the world was at his feet. And for some reason, he just decided that that's not what he wanted out of life. He would rather be in a band, or he'd rather be an artist, or he'd rather be something else. And he just didn't take these opportunities, you know? And yeah, he's on the Free Fringe now.
What about the Free Fringe? Because, like, all right, let me see if I got this right. You have the Edinburgh Arts Festival, and then many years ago, a Fringe Festival was created on the edge of that. And that's what this is now. It became this, but this was kind of put on as a rebellious act once, wasn't it?
68 years ago.
When the Fringe started.
68 years ago. Right. I mean, older than I am. Not much, but... yeah. And that was the best thing that ever happened to Edinburgh, because the International Festival, which has been going over 70 years, it is a curated, funded festival. So everybody's invited. What the Fringe did was open its doors and say anybody can come. And that's how it stayed. So in a way, myself and a few others have got together and tried to make it more professional, in that we do invite people, we do curate. Sometimes we pay, sometimes they pay us. It's really expensive to do, you know, the festival now. And it has kind of reached saturation point. There are smaller venues that are not selling, you know, their shows. And then after that, there came a Free Fringe. And the Free Fringe...
Right, so now they're trying to hijack your festival.
Yeah.
Right.
And what... But the whole thing is, the Free Fringe is never going to work other than how it works now, which is you go and into a room that's above a pub or any room in Edinburgh that they give you, but you don't have proper lighting, you don't have proper staging, you don't have...
And you stand there with a bucket at the end by the door.
That's right.
Yeah,
and that like can a work. I mean, that's fine, but it's not what we're doing. You know, I mean, we may have a really rough show called Late in Live and a lot of hecklers, but we have a really good stage crew. What happens a lot at Late in Live is things like crowd surfing, and you know, we have crowd surfing competitions and really things that I don't actually approve of, and it's not very funny, but the crowd love it, you know. And but we have stage crew that, you know, health and safety, they make sure nobody falls, they make sure nobody's hurt.
Right.
And, you know, if there's a heckler that is over the top or violent or anything, they're out right away, you know, that kind of thing. But whereas the Free Fringe, you don't even have anyone standing at the door, you know.
Right. Well, I saw this woman, Scottish comedian, female, came up to you the other night and said, I'm going to go to the Free Fringe next year or something.
Yeah.
And I guess you had put her on here a few years.
I have, yeah.
I mean, that must... I mean, be a bee in your bonnet, as they say.
As far as I'm concerned, it's called tax avoidance. All they're doing is wanting to get cash so they don't have to pay the tax man, and the tax man will find out in the end anyway.
Right.
You know, I think it'll work for her, and that's fine. I don't mind if she does it, but, you know, what am I meant to say to that? What am I meant to say? Oh, what a shame that I'm going to lose you. No, it's right. Not, you know.
Well, I mean, yeah, maybe that's what she was expecting.
Yeah.
Saying, please don't go, please don't go.
And no, I didn't.
Yeah. But, I mean, you know, when you take care of acts so wonderfully here, that is certainly got to be insulting if someone...
But the thing is that I didn't have room for her here this year. She went to Underbelly. And the thing is, there are, as you have probably already noticed, there is a lot of competition between all the bigger... You know, I want to get the best shows and the best comics. But because I'm smaller than the other ones and I am not as powerful or have as much money as them, you know, I don't own the bars here. We only get a percentage of the bars. Right outside my door is a very powerful company that have their own bars, and they can go and buy any comic they want. Now, that's fine. And they put up huge posters, and, you know, they put up huge posters of people that are only in 50-seaters. You know, how can you decide what to go and see? The only way I think it works is by word of mouth. You know, have you seen that Tom Rhodes? He's really good. Go and see him. You know, do you like American comics? He's a really good one. You know, that kind of thing. That's what you want.
Well, I know that I've waited, and I've always wanted to do the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, you know. And I waited for years because I didn't want to come here with some half-assed show. And then the fact that I had stopped drinking alcohol this year, I thought, wow, you know, I feel on top of my game. I'm focused. I'm not drinking. Yeah, this will be the year that I do it. What about the fact that this year all the mainstream newspapers kind of pulled their...
That's been really,
a lot
really
of their
hard.
Reviewers. I mean, this night, 2014, everything kind of changed this year here.
I have to say, from my point of view, the Commonwealth Games was on in Glasgow, so a lot of the audiences at the beginning were there. And we also had this thing with... There's a real crisis in the press. You know, there's lots of newspapers not printing as many copies. So we decided to go with the Times, and the Times and Sunday Times as media partners. And although they've been supportive from one point of view, there's nobody has really noticed, and maybe that is just that we have to stick with them and learn from our mistakes and make sure that they do better, because they do print more than, say, the Scotsman and the Scotland on Sunday, which we've always been with, which is a local newspaper. I mean, I am born and bred in Edinburgh and I live and work in Edinburgh, I don't come up from London and put on shows and then go away, which is what a lot of them do, you know. So I would rather have the Scotsman in Scotland on Sunday, but it's really hard. We have to just try and work with the ones that want to help and want to make it work, you know, and they can't employ it as many people. You know, they've even moved out of their offices and rented the offices out to a Game Boy station people, whatever they're called, Rockstar or something.
How is this going to affect future Fringe festivals? I mean, is this giving the blogger and the amateur reviewer more power now?
Yeah, that's a great idea. You're just saying that. I should know that.
Because that's what I did.
Yeah.
Because I read in The Guardian how, oh, all these amateur blogger comedy people are making these reviews. Anybody with a website. I mean, I remember Chortle, when they started, it was just a crappy little website.
That's right.
And who's this guy with a crappy website to be reviewing shows?
And he's become very powerful, actually.
Right. And so I thought, you know, hey, I got a website, I got a podcast, I can start giving out reviews.
Yeah. Well.
I have.
Start right now.
I did. No. Yisrael Campbell, Lucy Pohl.
Yeah.
I Tom Rhodes Radio gives 5 stars.
Good.
I started giving out some reviews for shows that I love.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, Yisrael even put it on his poster.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Okay.
5 stars, Tom Rhodes Radio.
That's great. The thing is, where is it all going to end? You know, I mean, I've been asked a lot, what's the future of comedy? I mean, my feeling is that you've got to be funny and you've got to work hard and you've got to get out there. And the more that you work, the better you'll become. But there are people that aren't going to be able to live and work as a comic, you know. And if they don't write new material and they don't have the determination, it's not going to come to them, you know. So I predict it's going to get smaller. But
the festival.
No, not the festival.
Or comedy in general.
Yeah. But I say that. There's always, I mean, last night we had our final of So You Think It's Funny, and there was 9 really, really strong, good comics. And we had over 600 applicants this year, all over from all over the UK. I have to say that the girl, Julia Chamberlain and Fred, who go and look at all of it, they saw an awful lot of terrible comedy, and they pick out 60 people and invite them up to Edinburgh. And unfortunately, not enough women. We need more women to do it. But there we had a really strong final. 3 Scots as well. 3 Scottish people.
Great. What advice would you give to any comedian that wanted to come and do the Edinburgh Fringe Festival?
Well, probably either. If you're a stand-up, I think So You Think You're Funny is one of the best avenues of just getting a step up and getting noticed. But if that's not what you want to do, then
that's for younger comedians.
Yeah, well, no, it doesn't matter what age you are.
No, I mean, like, but more as established comedians would come here and put on their own hour show.
No, that's right. So You Think You're Funny are for people. The criteria is that you've only worked in stand-up for a year. So you can't have done it any longer than you. But so that's the point, that last night we had the final and they were really good and they're going to work in comedy, there's no doubt about it. But otherwise, I think there's nothing wrong with starting the Free Fringe to learn. But otherwise, I think it really depends on the kind of show you have, because Pleasance put on a lot of comedy. I put a lot of comedy on. Underbelly and Assembly do as well. But I think I put on the newer stuff. So in the 80s and 90s, I would be the one that would start them off. And then they'd go to Pleasance and then Assembly. That was how it was. But I don't think it's like that anymore. I think it's free for all, and it, you know, whatever you can.
Well, it seems like a lot of people kind of expect the Edinburgh Fringe Festival to launch them to superstardom, and it seems like some people are greatly disappointed when they come here and that doesn't happen.
That's right.
And then this year, I've seen a lot of acts that, I mean, they're not having a good month. They didn't get reviewed. They were having small audiences, and they're miserable.
And not only are they miserable, but they're out of pocket. And that's a problem. It's expensive to come up and do. And so my advice to anyone that wants to come is make sure you have a really good, strong show. That's a festival called Festival Flu. A really good title. Interesting poster. I don't believe in these huge ones. I don't think they're, you know.
Doesn't make a difference if you get the side of a bus.
I don't think so. I think, you know, it's just.
We just came here in a taxi and saw Daniel Sloss on the side of a bus.
Yeah, well, that's and the, his management.
And the person I was riding in a taxi pointed out, oh, that's funny. I don't think Daniel Sloss has ever taken a bus.
Probably not. I have no idea. It's quite loud in here, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's a good microphone, though. I think we're all right. And then this is only recording right here.
Oh, right.
Yeah, is it's it? Got a setting where it's only recording it. So that, it's there'll still be noise, but it's,
okay,
it's recording
good,
it.
Yeah, yeah. No, I just think that to have, you have to have, I'll tell you from my point of view, and I don't think you've had a chance to see, a very good festival show is Beck Hill. Beck Hill's been coming here about 5 years now. And this year, I think she's got the show that really works, because there's a sort of beginning, middle, and end. There's a lot of meat to it. You know, there's a lot she's trying to say. And she does this thing where she says, oh, I want to have an award-winning show. She didn't win the award, but, and there's a bit of sentimentality in it, so it's funny, it's sentimental, it's, you know, there's, I think a good show has to be funny, sad, you know, that reaches all the emotions, you know, that's my view.
So straight stand-up is, not gonna stand.
Well,
out
the
here.
whole thing is that, yes, of course it is, but there's no such thing as straight stand up anymore. I mean, the Americans do it all the time, and when I go to America, I kind of get bored by. And this is going out to Americans, so I'm probably
going
to be very
unwell.
But I do find
my biggest fan lives in Glasgow.
Oh well, that's okay.
And
then.
Delft, Holland. And, China. They're
yes,
everywhere.
Well, it's about being interesting, and you know, the whole thing about my girlfriend dumped me is, you know, just a bit too boring now. You know, people talking about the same subjects is just, I don't think.
It's, well, I think the American view of it, the Edinburgh Festival, is that you have to have some big sad moment in it.
Yes, well, I hope so, but the American club comic just. You know, they just, it's, there's more gags and more chat, but it's not substantial. I never find it very substantial, you know. Maybe I'm being horrible, and maybe, I just find the British comic stronger.
Do you prefer British comedy, obviously?
I do. Oh, that's, you're out of that. No, that's not true, because I told you I like Patrice O'Neill. You know, I do like...
And you were saying that you wish
brilliant.
More women would be it. I think like this year's Fringe Festival, in my opinion, has been the year of the woman.
Tig Notaro last year. And Tig Notaro is well known as a really, really great comic. The critics loved her. But I found her... I'm better not say it too loud. But I found it a bit bland. You know, it wasn't substantial. Because I wanted her to bring the show that she initially talked about when she lost her breath. And I know she's done it so much, why should she talk about it again? You know,
right.
But there was a show when she had gone through an awful lot. She had life-changing moments, and now she doesn't need to talk about that.
Well, I mean, I lost, my sister died of breast cancer in 2011. My father was killed by a drunk driver in 2009. For me to sit up there and have some sad, poignant moment about that, it's not why I went into comedy.
No, I know.
And maybe
and
I'm not ready. Maybe I'm not ready to deal with that at the moment.
Yeah.
I mean, it took me a couple years to stop crying.
Sure.
So now that I'm kind of cheered up a little bit, you know?
But,
I mean, like, I'm telling, like, some pretty tragic, humiliating stories in my show, but I'm not ready to deal with that.
And I'm not asking you to, and I'm not asking Tig either, but, you know, to just knock over a bottle of water and everybody laugh is not funny enough. You know, she had a plinth and she had, and this was in Montreal, and she had a bottle of water and she knocked it down by mistake and everybody laughed, so she picked it up and did it again.
Yeah.
And I just thought, you see, you laughed at that.
No, I
Banana skin humor. And then she talked about
I'm laughing at the ridiculousness of repeating that act.
Yeah, yeah. And then she talked about having chocolate ice cream on her chin, you know, because she went, and I just thought, okay. the guy that I absolutely loved that I saw in Montreal was Moshe Kasher.
I love Moshe, yeah.
And Moshe,
also been on this show.
Well, do you know what? Can I get him to come over here? He had a fabulous show called Kasher in the Rye, and I just wanted him to bring it to Edinburgh.
Yeah, he wrote a book of the same title. Yeah.
And it's a perfect Edinburgh show, perfect. So I'm wrong about saying I don't like Americans. I love them, but there's just some that talk about, you know, what club comics. A lot of them talk on the same subject, and you know that sort of, hey, where are you from? What do you do? You're, you know, that kind of.
Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of, New York always had that. Guys always ask the audiences a lot of questions. I was in New York City years ago, and the comedian went on stage who obviously wasn't watching the comedians before him, and he comes out going, hey, where are you from? What are you doing? This guy in the audience goes, look, I'm from Cleveland. He's from Philadelphia. He's a dentist. I'm a plumber. Tell us a fucking joke.
That's right. Yeah. You see?
Yeah.
You've got it.
I mean, that's a kind of like 80s hack New York style, too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Doesn't it? Now, New York is a renaissance of alternative brilliant comedians, but, you know, you're talking about comedy getting smaller. I think it's like a seesaw, like a teeter-totter. When the UK is up, the America's down, because we had our boom, the late 80s, early 90s,
and then it
really got smaller. But the great thing was, shitty comedians and shitty clubs were forced to leave it, and their heart wasn't in it.
Which is great.
And I think now comedy's booming again in the States, so I think now the teeter-totter's gone down on this side.
Yeah.
So I think now your scene is going to shrink over here.
Well, that's the thing. Shitty clubs, and you know that.
And it'll remove the chafe.
Yeah. And I think because of that thing that came along, which is television. And because when I first started working with stand-ups and everything, I always used to try and sell Late in Life and stuff like that to television. They went, oh, no, stand-up doesn't work on TV. But actually, what happened was Addison Cresswell came along off the curb, and they just cleaned it up and put it on a theatre.
Yeah.
And did Live at the Apollo. And that meant that some of these people could go and sell out stadiums. And that kind of comedy, I don't like. I just, I find it, you know, that, I mean, I know Eddie Izzard's been doing it for a while, but the fact that you have a delay at the back and you've got big screens and
on the
and
side.
That,
yeah, yeah.
And it's
comedy was never meant for stadiums.
Nothing like that.
And then if you're watching it on a big screen on the side, you may as well be able.
Yeah, and actually, it's. I mean, I don't blame the comedians for taking the money and enjoying it. You know, why shouldn't they? Because it's there to be taken. However, and I was just talking to a comic earlier, or someone who promotes comedy, and he went, doing comedy in Scandinavia is like just a big cash machine, you know, because they've got money and they are really wanting comedy, you know, so they are just paying lots and lots of money to get comedy. But you know, for me personally, who's been doing it a long time, it's not why I went into comedy, and you know why I don't enjoy that, you know. I like spontaneity.
What have been your personal highlights? What have been your most memorable moments of the Fringe Festival? And
this year, there hasn't been, apart from meeting you, Tom.
Yep.
You are my personal highlight this year.
I am, right?
You are, absolutely you are. Absolutely you are. Stephen Kay coming back and doing a chat show is lovely, because he's not done us for a long time. But my personal highlight was from years ago, was when 2005 I found Tim Minchin in Australia and brought him over, and that was a huge, you know, I hardly drank that festival, and I was very focused, and I pushed to get him that next leg up, which he got. The only thing is, I didn't go with him. Isn't it always the way? But we're still friends, and it's great, and, you know.
Well, I love that, you know, you go to Montreal, you go to Melbourne, you go to you go to these different worldwide comedy festivals, and you're looking for the best talent.
Yeah. But it's not always, I mean, when I went to Melbourne, he was in a little room in a, you know, outside, not outside, but, you know, not on the main drag, you know. And there was a little bit of talk about him, but, and that was what was great. And I just happened to be able to give him that help that he needed, which didn't happen to a colleague of his that came over and went into assembly, and he just didn't make it. And he's still big in Australia, but not the rest of the world, whereas Tim's done the big, you know, written a musical, you know, lives in the Hollywood Hills now.
Walking around naked, drinking wine from goblets right now, probably.
Yeah. Indeed. And he did Californication. I thought that's what you were going to
say. Did he really?
Yeah, he did.
But now, you know, you seem to me the most quintessential Scottish person on the planet Earth. Right after Sean Connery. And then I find out
that I'm Norwegian.
You're Norwegian. I just found out you were Norwegian, and you speak Norwegian.
I do, yeah.
Really?
I do. Yeah, and that's why I quite like taking comedy to Norway, because I've been taking, I mean, I took Bill Bailey to Norway, I took Tim Minchin to Norway, I took Joe Brand to Norway.
I expect to be next.
Well, I'd love you to go. You should go. You'll do great over there. They'll love you over there. And actually, the girl who runs Stand Up Norway is in Edinburgh at the moment, so and I've told them to go and see you.
Oh, great.
So they have VIP passes.
You know what, God, that is the other thing I love. God, thank you for pointing that out. The great thing about you, and I was trying to, for the listener, explain how, you know, you are very mother-loving of your acts. And, you know, just the shows here alone at the Gilded Balloon, I mean, you could just spend, you know, your festival going to your shows.
That's right.
But you are such a wonderful person. We're sitting out here at the Loft outside bar the other night. It was Mary Tobin who produces shows for the Melbourne Comedy Festival, the guy that books the Adelaide Festival, and then there was someone else from another festival, and you did everything short of making them pull out their agendas and put my name on dates. You are so wonderful for that.
You have to
use Tom Rhodes. Have you used Tom Rhodes? Has he done your festival? I mean, how many people do that? Nobody.
It's important, though.
So I don't know why Tim Minchin and Russell Brand and Eddie Izzard aren't working for you every other year.
Well, maybe they'll come back next year for my 30th year. Let's hope. I see your filming people got bored.
They're Dutch. That was nice that the Dutch humor channel. And there's the woman that we were talking about.
Yeah, indeed.
Threatened to go to the Free Friend, waving at you like.
But so she wants to be here and meet all her comedy friends.
And what about? What else can you tell me about your personal history with stand-up comedy, and how is Scottish independence going to affect the Fringe Festival?
It'll be fine. I mean, the thing is, people don't want to talk about it unless you're a yes voter. And the thing is, I think it would be the biggest mistake in the world for Scotland to go independent, because I think you're much better together than apart. We're under 5 million people. Maybe half of them pay taxes. You know, they think there's oil out there, but the oil's been taken, most of it, you know. Okay, we've got a bit of whiskey, you know. Scotland's wonderful. It's, you know, everybody's proud of Scotland. I love Scotland. It's a great, great country. But, you know, we've had our fighting history. We don't need any more of it. I mean, all of them want to be like Norway, the yes people. And Norway is a brilliant country, but they actually got independence 100 years ago. and used it and worked. It's going to take 100 years for Scotland to be okay, and I'm not going to live that long, and I don't want to live through the sufferance that we're going to go through over the next 20, 30 years. You know, it'll be awful. But however, having said that, if it is a yes vote, I will have to accept it because I'm not moving.
Right.
I don't think. Maybe I will have to move. I don't think so, though. I love Edinburgh.
I've rented an apartment in the Stockbridge area.
Have you?
Yeah, you knew that. I told you that. No, I got a lovely little house.
Yeah.
And
you've had fish pie made for you. I know
my
that.
Wife made fish pie this week. Lasagna last week. She's playing the kitchen like a violin. And that's another reason why I've enjoyed the festival so much. Really, like, we're living here. And so these pamphlets keep coming through the mail hole. Why you should vote no, why you should vote yes. And the yes is spending a lot more money on pamphlets in the stock.
I have to say that, unfortunately, the yes people are quite aggressive, and you're not part of Scotland, you're not in if you're a no. And I find that quite intimidating, and I think it's wrong. You know, it's like, it's very aggressive. They're very aggressive about, well, you obviously don't care about Scotland if you vote no. That's nonsense. That is absolute nonsense. Eddie Izzard, big no.
Big no.
Yeah. J.K. Rowling, no.
Oh, good.
Which is great.
I watched, when we got here, this 8-part series, History of Scotland, this BBC special. And it's just white people killing white people over and over.
Just well, we didn't have any black people to kill. I mean, the Scots are a very proud nation and very aggressive and very pushy, and they will always fight for their right to bear arms or whatever it is. But I think Scotland's a lovely place to live, and I think there's lots and lots of, I think comedy will survive. The comedy in Scotland, the Scottish humour is amazing, you know?
What differentiates it from English comedy?
Well, I was going to, English comedy, the Dutch girls were asking me actually, the British are really, really good at laughing at themselves and you know, poking fun at themselves. I think the Glaswegians have the best sense of humour. They are, and yes, Billy Connolly is the one that's brought that to the world, but you just, they are the nicest people. You get in a taxi in Glasgow, they'll chat away to you, and they're lovely, and they'll make you laugh. They're just, and they can laugh at themselves. They can really laugh at themselves more than people in Edinburgh.
Because Edinburgh is more posh and fancy pants.
They think they're poor. They think they're poor. We've got a festival, you know.
Yeah. What is the best knowledge nugget about Scotland you can tell me? What's an interesting factoid?
Knowledge nugget.
A factoid. Something interesting that common people don't know about Scotland.
It's not all tartan and shortbread. Damn cool.
You need to fire your tourism council.
Yeah. What do people not know about Scotland? I think there's some of the best inventors. The telephone was invented by a Scot.
Alexander Graham Bell.
Yes, he was Scottish. The penicillin was invented in Scotland. It's not, it's true.
The Tom Rhodes in his 20s is grateful for that.
Yeah, you needed that. All these kind of things. TV.
You invented the television.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah, really? We did. What's his name? I'm going to tell you his name in a minute.
Really?
Yeah. Because they are so prolific. They are brilliant. Burns, Auld Lang Syne.
Yeah, you know,
That was Robert Burns, our bard.
What is exactly he saying in that song? We're supposed to forget our old friends? Just because it's...
Should old acquaintance be forgotten, never brought to mind.
Right, so what? It's a new year, now we just forget everybody we know?
No, because that's what they're saying. It's a, you know, here's my hand, my trusty friend. Give me your hand tonight, you know. It's all about that. It's not the opposite.
Okay, you're my new friend now, is what it's saying. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. what is the best comedy advice you've ever been given?
Smile and the world smiles with you. No, that's got not comedy advice. My son is partially deaf, and when he was 8, he said to me, "Oh, Mum, I don't want to be deaf." And I said, "I know you don't want to be deaf. I don't want you to be deaf either, but you are." And what he does, and it's always done, is he smiles at people before anything else, because he knows that he'll get a good reaction back, you know. And so it's not good to go around complaining. It's better to, you know,
have a sunny disposition.
Try and have a sunny disposition. She'd see me at home.
Karen, I love you to death. I can't thank you enough for treating me like a king the whole time, and I'm really happy that we're friends now.
Well, do you know what? It's been an absolute joy, and I think we talk about you, you know.
Oh, yeah?
That you are a very attentive person.
What do you mean?
Well, when you talk to people, you look at them and listen to what they're saying, and that is the most important gift that anyone could have.
You've noticed that?
I have noticed that, yeah. And that is really, really important. Tim Minchin does the same. Always talks to you and as if... And I think that is why we've become friends, because you know what you're doing.
Thanks, Karen.
I wonder what you were like when you were a drunk, though.
Yeah.
When you were on all that substance.
I still look people in the eye when I talked, but
yeah,
you know.
If I was friendly with Russell Brand in those days, when I actually never noticed when he was completely out of his head, because he's a nice guy. You know, he's a bit aggressive and everything, but
right.
You know, never to me.
Yeah. I don't think I was that much of a jerk, but you know, it's better.
But do you know what? Better now than before.
Absolutely.
Do you know Tom Stade?
Yeah, I just met him this festival.
Yeah, he talks an awful lot, but he stopped. He still drinks a bit, but he realizes that he's better not doing it, you know?
Yeah.
He's got a lovely family and, you know, wants to keep that together, you know.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much better stuff I can do by not drinking. I won't take up any more of your time, but in closing, is there any words of wisdom or advice you'd like to give to the people of the earth?
Oh, dear, dear. Can you keep me alive for a bit longer? No, yeah. Go and see Tom Rhodes. Go and see stuff at the Gilded Balloon and come to the Edinburgh Festival, because it is the best arts festival in the world.
I agree. And I can't wait to write a new material so I...
Yeah,
come
so you
back
can come
here
back
as soon as humanly possible.
Yeah, because you're not allowed to do the same show twice.
I understand.
You understand that?
Yeah, I know
Kate,
that.
I'm
yeah.
glad.
Karen, I absolutely adore you. And long may you run, sister.
Thank you very much.